It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to The Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, it's great to be back on this Monday. Gang's all here, ready to go. Thanks for joining us, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show, as we do every Monday. Best and worst of the weekend. What you saw that you liked, you didn't like. You can dial us up. You can email. You can tweet. You can watch. You can do all the above. We say good morning to those watching on Peacock, our streaming partner. Download the app. Watch for free. We say hello to iHeartRadio, Premier Radio, Fox Sports Radio, and the other affiliates around the country. Play of the day, stat of the day, poll question, all of that forthcoming. The former coach, now analyst for the mothership, Jeff Van Gundy, in a couple of minutes. Peter King, NBC Sports, he will join us a little bit later on. Peter hinting maybe the Jags do something interesting, maybe a surprise at the number one overall pick. We'll talk about that coming up in a moment. Here are the details, 877-3DP-SHOW, email address, dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle, @DP Show. Seton will provide us with a poll question, and your input is always welcome. Pelicans, Suns tied at 2 games apiece. Bucks, Nuggets, and Heat all win. Tonight, Celtics, Nets, Raptors, 76ers, Jazz, and the Mavericks. We'll talk about that with Jeff Van Gundy here in a moment. We start draft week. Now, normally during draft week, as we get ready on that Monday, we go, boy, this is going to be interesting because we're going to go, who's going number one? Who's going number two? Any trades? What's going to happen here? You know, you always have those moments where you go, wow, I didn't see that one coming. So when you say, or I'm going to say, or I've thought, I don't know how much buzz there is with this draft. And because we don't have the marquee quarterbacks. We don't even have, well, we had a lot of wide receivers. You don't even have that edge rusher that you go, boy, he's going to be great. This is one of those drafts where you go, yeah, all right, we got a couple of wide receivers, you got some offensive linemen, you got a great defensive back or two. Not a lot of headline-making moments here. We don't have that Trevor Lawrence player in this draft. That doesn't mean something wild won't happen. After all, the draft's in Vegas. Who knows? You could say, and such selects such and such. Is he here? It is Vegas, but you go into the week and you go, okay, what are the possibilities here? Because there'll be a team where you go, oh, boy, like the Niners with Trey Lance. Wow, didn't see that one coming. Or will the Falcons take a quarterback? Denver didn't take a quarterback. That means that they're going to be taking Aaron Rodgers. They're going to trade him. Patriots, Bill Belichick. Oh, he found his Tom Brady. His Tom Brady, Mac Jones. There's always something there. And it'll be the same this year. Guaranteed. And it might be a player that you're not that familiar with. It might be a backstory you're not familiar with. It might be a team that reaches, a team that, you know, all of a sudden has somebody fall right into their laps. There could be a trade. Do the Steelers take Kenny Pickett? Do they take Malik Willis? By the way, and I've said this over the years, but, you know, we still buy into it. Nobody tells you the truth. No one. Why would they? Unless they want to give you information. You know what? The culprits are the agents. Because the agents will go, hey, you want some information? I'm hearing this. That's why I don't trust the agents. You know, I do have some sources. I have a source who's a scout who said, hey, this is what I'm hearing with Jacksonville at the top. They're going to go with the guy who's either the safe pick in Hutchinson out of Michigan or Trayvon Walker, the edge rusher, defensive player out of Georgia, who has a higher ceiling. That's what I'm hearing. And plus, he went through all the particulars with these players, being able to talk to them or examine them or watch their workouts. So I trust his information. He's also the one that told me that the Cleveland Browns were going to take Baker Mayfield, a story that we had before anybody else did. But a lot of people have agendas, and a lot of people want to give you information, but they want to help out their client. I'll go back to when I was hosting the NBA draft on the mothership, and I had an agent come up to me and said, are you going to address the knee injuries? Who was the kid out of Washington State drafted by Portland?
Brandon Roy.
Yeah. So he says, you guys going to talk about the knees? And I said, well, I'll leave that to my analyst, you know. But he goes, yeah. I mean, he won't stay in the league that long. Got bad knees. So then, you know, you start asking your analyst there, said, hey, how is Brandon Roy? You know, he could be rookie of the year. One of my analysts said, I said, does he have, you know, knee issues? Yeah, but I don't know the severity of it. I said, well, I just had somebody who said, hey, you know, he's got like a degenerative knee issue. And I was told you're going to get a lot of that from agents or people close to agents, sources close to. So it's a game that's played. And I've been used before where somebody will tell you something and you go, no, I got it on a good authority. And then you realize, ooh, I think I got played. And having been at the mothership for 18 years, I saw that happen to our analysts, you know, even as great as like Peter Gammons. I remember he was given information about the next head coach, I think, for Tampa Bay. And it turned out that it wasn't true. But, you know, somebody was trying to help their client. I mean, it's a game. And that's why you get a little closer, maybe, you know, Tuesday afternoon or Wednesday. Then you start to hear a little bit more information. Then it starts to get a little bit more serious. But all this stuff leading up to it, all these mock drafts, all of that stuff, that's for entertainment purposes only. And what I found is it does introduce you to certain players that you might not be, you know, aware of. Like Sauce Gardner, I was told by a scout, that guy's a top five pick. And I even talked to, you know, my source yesterday, and I said, is Sauce Gardner still going to be a top five pick? He goes, he could be the best player in the draft, Cincinnati defensive back. But my source said, the best player doesn't always go number one. Keep that in mind. Because a lot of times there'll be somebody who's better or have a longer career or more of an impact, but quarterbacks are normally taken. How many times in the last 20 years have we had a draft where we didn't have a quarterback taken number one overall? Because I can remember Jadeveon Clowney, Eric Fisher.
Oh, good call out of Central Michigan.
Yeah.
Good call. Good call.
It wasn't a good call by the Chiefs.
Well, he was a nice player for them.
But we never say he was a bust.
I think he made a Pro Bowl or two.
Uh-huh.
He had a nice career there.
Okay.
He was not number one pick all-timer.
Okay. And Jadeveon Clowney, to me, has never lived up to the tackle he made in the Outback Bowl. Although he has made three Pro Bowls.
Yeah, three.
So he's not the impact player that, you know, we thought he was going to be. Yes, Paul.
2008, Jake Long, tackle out of Michigan from Miami. Four Pro Bowls. Nice career. I got Mario Williams, defensive out of North Carolina State, went to the Houston Texans.
That was the big debate between Reggie Bush and Mario Williams.
Signability.
Yes. And then all of a sudden, like, we can't sign Reggie Bush, and the Buffalo Bills take Mario Williams. You're going, signability. Yeah, Paul.
Then Miles Garrett, 2017 out of Texas A&M. He's, you know, first team all pro.
He's a great player. But you're going to have that this year where, you know, do you take the safe pick? Do you take Aiden Hutchinson? Do you take Trayvon Walker? That's going to be – or is there a surprise, as Peter King has pointed out in his Monday morning quarterback column. All right, we'll get your phone calls coming up. Seton, what kind of poll question do you have for me?
Well, we could go with one that's semi-NFL draft related. All right. And that, where will Debo end up?
See, that to me is going to be the big storyline here. There's two storylines that I'm looking at. This broke last week when we're on vacation, and Debo's probably looking around going, do you see what Tyreek Hill got? Did you see what Devontae Adams got? I'm every bit what those players are. And he's more valuable to his team, the Niners, than Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams were to their teams. And certainly, I would rank it as Debo and then Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill. What Debo did is basically move the chains. Like, what do you need me to do? Because I got a quarterback who, I know, all he does is win, but I got to run the ball and catch the ball, and I got to do everything here. Yeah, see.
But if you look at, it's been a crazy year for the 49ers, right? Because if you go back to the last draft where, no, they were getting Mac Jones at number three.
Yeah, it's true.
They were getting Mac at number three, and then, oh, no, wait, we got Trey, and now is Trey going to start over Jimmy? When are we trading Jimmy? Is Jimmy even going to be on the roster in 22?
From what I was told, there's not a trade market for Jimmy Garoppolo.
And now Debo wants out.
And Debo wants out. Would money solve all of this, though? That's what I'm curious. Because if I'm Trey Lance, I got to be, you know, saying to management, man, I really need Debo in here. If I'm going to be taking over as starting quarterback here. So that is one storyline. The other one's Baker Mayfield. And I'll go with my source who said, Baker Mayfield, he thinks, after the first round is when you might see Baker Mayfield traded. Teams, if they get their quarterback, how many quarterbacks are taken? You know, I'm hearing Sam Howell at North Carolina is a – and Matt Corral, as we talked about, I think Kenny Pickett is probably a second-round talent. I think all these quarterbacks in a normal draft are second-round talents. But there's no quarterbacks. So somebody's got to be the first quarterback off the board. And I think Baker Mayfield probably gets traded after the first round. Once teams, maybe second round. But, you know, when you have that day, you know, the rest of the night to figure things out, and you go, all right, well, who are we taking? Well, we missed out on him. All right, why don't you see if we'll give him a fourth round draft pick for if I'm Seattle, if you miss out on a quarterback, if you're looking for one. All right. Give him a fourth-round pick and you know, see if they'll split his salary with us or something. Yeah, Paul.
How about Thursday night after the first round completes? We have the guys nobody wants draft. We have a one-round draft, and Baker Mayfield could go. Jimmy Garoppolo could go. Mm. And you have to, like, give up, like, a fixed price and you get a fixed contract. That's good TV.
Yeah, I think Baker's going to have to wait. And look, I know this is a clickbait when it comes to Baker Mayfield, and it'll stay that way. Because the mothership and NFL Network, they'll milk it for all it's worth. Because we're going to find out where you know, nobody wants Baker Mayfield, it feels like, but everybody wants to talk about Baker Mayfield. Debo Samuel, where's he going to end up? You got to trade for him, and then you got to pay him? That's one of those crazy ones. Like, if you're Green Bay, do you end up paying what you would have paid Devontae Adams, but then you're going to have to give up a couple of first-round picks or whatever you're going to give up for Debo Samuel? That's how crazy it could turn out. But wide receivers are going to be front and center. But I'm going to guess that, you know, first pick and the Jacksonville Jaguars take Trayvon Walker. And you go, okay. And then the Lions will be on the clock. Will the Lions take Malik Willis? Would they go that early on a quarterback? Like, these are the things. This is how you play it up. You know, you got to add to the suspense there. What other poll questions do we have today, Seton?
Well, just this is a totally random thought that I'm seeing just off of Twitter. It has nothing to do with a poll question.
Ooh.
But isn't it crazy how comfortable we are? Kyle Kuzma tweeted this. I know we're numb to a lot of things, but in this society, a 7-foot center just cashed a three to win a playoff game. It's crazy how many super tall, you know, what formerly would have been big men are such great outside shooters and that it's just not even a thought anymore.
It's the Dirk Nowitzki effect. Yeah. When you think about 20 years later, Dirk Nowitzki. But also, if you look at how players are developed in Europe, they're developed to be either, you know, your ball handling skills as a 7-footer or if you're a 6-footer. They want you to have the fundamentals to and to be able to shoot, to be able to have great form, be able to shoot free throws. Like these are all important things for those players. And I think you're starting to see the trickle down of, you know, Joel Embiid can hit a jumper. Karl-Anthony Towns can shoot outside. The Joker can. There are so many of them that can. But you're right. It's commonplace now where you go, man, all right, 7-footer on the perimeter. Who would have thought? Yes, Seton.
We could go with basically off of our next guest, maybe a little better question for him. Which team down 3-1 is most likely to pull off a comeback? So you have Atlanta right now. They're down 3-1 to the Heat. Denver's down to the Warriors. Toronto down to the Sixers. And then Bulls down 3-1 to Milwaukee. Any of them coming back?
Well, New Orleans is the one series that I'm curious about because it's tied at 2 games apiece. The Devin Booker situation. Could Zion Williamson play? Right? Because we keep saying, well, where's Zion? He should be playing. He's dunking and the whole thing. Okay, Ben Simmons. Then we're going, no, you can't have him play. Like, aren't they sort of the same? That you're saying to Ben Simmons, he's been 10 days pain-free. Shouldn't he play? Zion Williamson, put him in there. Let's bring him back. Yes, he.
But if you had those guys play, aren't you sort of setting them up for failure?
Yeah, I
get that there's some upside to it, but
we'll talk about that. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Brooklyn Nets spent big money to acquire stars like KD and Kyrie, Ben Simmons over the last couple of years. All that star power has, or at least it did make the Nets a favorite to win the title. And we've seen a lot of teams become championship contenders after acquiring multiple superstars. I mean, look at the Lakers. You know, look at what the LA Rams did. You know, the Nets' first-round matchup with the Celtics is there's, you know, this building a roster. Celtics are all homegrown, if you look at it. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, all drafted by Boston. You know, you have the Nets trying to throw in Kyrie with KD, and it's not working. But give credit. What'll get lost in this is how great Boston has been this year and certainly playing defense. This program brought to you by the great folks at Mercedes. Groundbreaking runs in the family. Safety runs in the family. Extraordinary runs in the family. 2022 Mercedes-Benz range of SUVs. Every member waiting to impress. Learn more at MBUSA.com. We make way for the great analyst from the mothership, Jeff Van Gundy, former head coach. He was on the call Celtics-Nets games 1 and 3 and joins us now. What's the big difference in the Celtics and Nets and why the Celtics are up in a commanding fashion?
Well, I thought actually Brooklyn played an outstanding first 2 games. On the road, they gave themselves chances to win in both games. They shot the ball better than 50% in both games against a great Celtics defense. So I really liked the way they played the first 2 games. It was game 3. It was the turnovers combined with Durant obviously not playing or Irving playing particularly well. And the other guys, the complementary players around them other than Bruce Brown, didn't have good nights either. So it was a bad night all the way around and one they could ill afford.
Would you sign up Kyrie for a long-term contract if you're the Nets?
Well, it's tough choices now, you know, because right now their depth has been compromised. Joe Harris has been out most of the year. So very good for them from a shooting standpoint, good rebounder, and he's got stability to him. And then, you know, Ben Simmons, if you're going to say you're going to trade Harden, and in this 1 year, what you're going to get back for Harden is Seth Curry, who's hobbled, and Andre Drummond, that's a lose from a talent standpoint, too. So I think you have to look at your roster in totality. I know this because guys don't play as much now. either minutes in a game or over the course of the season, you have to have quality depth. And that's what right now the Celtics have built. They built a strong 8-9 man rotation. And right now the Nets don't have enough depth due to injury to be able to put it together and make a championship run.
Would you sign Kyrie long-term?
I'd have to look at all those factors, Odin. I mean, obviously he's had durability issues for many different reasons, and my team has had durability issues. You know, the talent is obviously a unique offensive talent, the handle and all that, shot making. He hasn't played very well in the last couple games here after a great second half in game one. I just in general, forgetting Kyrie for the second, I think you always have to ask yourself, and I don't know what he'd get. Let's say he'd make $40 million. Are you better getting one $40 million player, or are you better getting, you know, not as good as the $40 million, but having two really good $20 million players? I think you have to think about how you want to surround Simmons and Durant, because those two are there. And, you know, you're going to have to build around those two.
Let's go back a week or so ago. It felt like the Nets, you know, they're saying, hey, Ben's, you know, he's been pain-free. He's been working out. Like, why are they setting him up to be the fall guy from the standpoint of, oh, wait, he's not playing again? Why not just say, we believe he's out. We're not expecting him to play in this series. Instead of, hey, this could maybe tonight. Like, I just don't understand the philosophy, unless they're trying to kind of push him into, come on, let's go, let's play, let's suck it up here.
Well, Dan, I think at least what I've read, those are the sources saying that he's, you know, on track to play in game four. When we've talked to Steve Nash prior to the games that we've done, he's always said, you know, I think it's too early to say. And so the reports that were coming out of whatever camp never matched up with what Steve Nash was saying to us, which was, hold on, he hasn't even practiced yet. And again, I have no idea what's going on. People who, I think it's hard to make these hard and fast pronouncements that he's either letting his team down or he's injured. Like, none of us really know if he's truly injured, if it's a mental health situation, or he could play, he's just not comfortable to play. And so I find it a really odd situation, and I certainly am going to remain judgment-free on him and what he stands for.
Yeah, it just feels like, and all Steve Nash has to say is, look, he's not playing. That's it. And that if he does come back, then we would have said, oh, wow, okay, you know, hey, he's progressing farther along. Like Zion Williamson. Why is Zion not playing? I mean, can he play 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes? Why would you not put him back in, or why is he not being put back in?
Well, that's an interesting question right there. If he's – I think right now, I think New Orleans is going to win that series. Once Booker went out, and let's say he can't come back, I think they have, even though they were 10 games under 500 during the regular season and Phoenix was 64-18, I think offensive talent-wise, New Orleans has the better team with the addition of McCollum and Valanciunas in the offseason. But if you throw in Zion for 15 minutes a game off the bench, I mean – then I think they become the prohibitive favorite over these last three games. So I've got to believe that, you know, Williamson just isn't healthy enough to play, because why wouldn't you want to play if you were healthy enough in the playoffs?
But I also look back to Michael Jordan's second year in the league. He breaks his foot. If we fast forward to now, Michael Jordan doesn't play in the playoffs probably. I mean, and really, that was his coming out party when he faced the Celtics in the Garden and had that dominating series and they lost. But now it's about caution, load management, all of that. So I'm just curious. And it's not, hey, the guys in my day era were tougher. It's just the philosophy, I think, is different than it used to be.
Oh, it's absolutely different. But it's not just different in the playoffs, Dan. You know that. It's different in how you work in the summer. Sometimes I think we take more pride in how we work out in the summer than how we play in the winter. I always hear about guys having great summers. I used to make we used to make light of one guy when back in the late 90s, early 2000s, that we competed against. All they ever would say about him was, what a great summer this guy had. He would always say, well, how about having a great April and May for one? I just think there's a lot different. Caution is a word that, is very in vogue. And I think the one thing that used to be asked was, well, if this was a playoff game, could he go?
Yeah.
That's out now too. Like, it's just different. It's not different, bad or good. The league looks at playing through things much differently than 15, 20 years ago. That may be good or that may be bad. It depends on your perspective.
Talking to Jeff Van Gundy, the analyst for ESPN and ABC. I brought this up with Commissioner Silver a couple of weeks ago, where I said, how about you just say you got to play in a certain number of games or certain number of minutes to qualify for first team, second team, third team, all NBA. All your postseason awards, you have to check in at a certain level. Therefore, you know you're going to get those players because of all the bonuses that are attached to first, second, third team, or winning the MVP or defensive player of the year, all of those things. What do you think of that idea?
Love the idea. Unfortunately, because like you just said, bonuses are tied to it all. You'd have to work that out with the Players Association, and they're never going to give on that. But I do think going forward in the next collective bargaining, you have to I know it sounds strange because you don't give incentives in other professions to show up at work. Like, hey, today, if you show up at work, we're going to give you, the chance to be all first team fire department. But in this situation, the way the trends are heading, and I think in a negative way, as far as for fans, they really don't know oftentimes going to a game, buying tickets for a game, tuning into a game, who's going to play. So I think to give extra incentive to either games played, minutes played for all the awards, I think is an outstanding idea that I think the commissioner should think very long about trying to include in the next collective bargaining agreement.
I think you should be able to buy star insurance. So you play an overage on your ticket, and let's say you're showing up to see Steph Curry and he doesn't play, then you get your money back. Or Luka, you're showing up to see Luka and you've got that star insurance. What do you think?
I like it. I think it's also unfortunate that we're having that conversation, but I do think we have to protect the customer and the consumer. Right now we're on this high that, people are watching, they're excited about NBA basketball, but we can never take for granted the fans and that they drive the freight. And I don't think Adam Silver takes him for granted. I hope we as teams and as a league don't take him for granted, because once you're not giving them the product they think is warranted for the price, obviously they're gonna spend their money elsewhere. So I think we have to have, I don't know if it's insurance. And I think, Dan, I don't know about you, but I think fans understand the difference between legit injury and just taking a night off when they choose to take a night off.
Yeah, but we can't ask that question, Jeff. We're not allowed to ask Ben Simmons, hey, why aren't you playing?
You're not. Unfortunately, because now even – and it used – hey, listen, the media is a lot different too, Dan. You used to be held account after every game. You didn't get a choice – the reporters were allowed into the locker room. And you could run away, but it was harder back then to run away. Now with the Zooms, teams don't make people available. They don't have to answer for either their play oftentimes. And that's why I admire the players that win or loss, good game or bad game, they stand before the media and they're not just there when they're giving them praise. They're there when they're taken on hard questions. And that's why I admired what Durant did. It had to be hard, you know, after game three to be disappointed in the result in your own play, but to stand there and take it, that's what part of your pay is for, your responsibility is for. But now it's harder. And frankly, a lot of the questions are more softballish because they are relying on players and the players' agents for leaks and sources off the record. So a lot has changed in the climate of how the game is covered, too.
Is James Harden getting old right before our very eyes?
Well, I think he certainly hasn't played to the MVP level that we're accustomed to. And that was in Brooklyn and in Philly. But I would not underestimate his greatness. I always thought the dynamic between he and Embiid was going to be a challenge because Harden has a style that's very unique in how he dominates the ball. And Embiid, when they play through him, whether it's in the high post, the elbow, or the low post, is absolutely dominant. So it's a hard dance to master. Actually, I think they played together exceptionally well. They fit together better than I thought. I just don't think Harden has been as efficient from a shooting standpoint as they need him to be if they're going to win it all.
I'll leave you with this. Bigger disappointment this season, the Lakers or the Nets?
Well, I think it all is where you start with your expectations. I never thought the Lakers were good. Like, I didn't understand the hype for their team. You know, they have an often injured team. They took away and stripped down all depth. And I think depth is incredibly important in today's NBA because of games missed and people don't play big minutes. So my expectations for the Lakers, I can't say I didn't think they'd make the play-in. I thought they would be, you know, an 8-9-10 type of team. But I'm not disappointed. I thought their roster was not very good. The Nets, on the other hand, I thought going into the year before you knew about Irving's vaccination status and the inability to play, Harden's, I didn't know he was going to be discontent. And all of that being said, January, I think it was 23rd, the Nets were in first place in the Eastern Conference at 29-16. And then Durant's injury wiped them out. So you took, you know, Irving's vaccination status, Harden's discontent, which led to Simmons not being able to play, Joe Harris being out all year, then Durant. They just got hit with a tidal wave of roster issues that truly could not be overcome. And I think Boston is the best team in the NBA. I think they will win it if they can stay healthy.
Wow.
I think they're that good defensively and roster construction wise. And so I think they got a horrible first round opponent as well. So everything that could go wrong so far for the Nets has gone wrong.
What's the coolest thing in your office?
Let me look here. My Mount Kilimanjaro picture, Dan. I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro about 8 years ago. And when I say I whimpered to the finish line, I basically had to be dragged to the finish line because we made a midnight walk up with was the last day on like 2 hours sleep. And the guys who were our guides, they basically told the friend I did it with, you got to go up and see your guy. He's having a mental breakdown because at like 4 a.m. in the cold of Mount Kilimanjaro, I was ready to break.
Did you cry?
I didn't, but literally, if it had been five more steps, I might have. And then the climb down was actually harder than the climb up, and they were just dragging me down. I mean, they were just like, this dude is weak-minded, and I was. So, yeah.
You know,
that I made it all the way to the top. Just, you know, I worked for this guy, Dan, like long ago, named Gordon Chiesa. He was a longtime assistant with the Utah Jazz, but I worked with him at Providence College. And he used to always tell players, despite yourself, you're going to be great. Like, because, and that was me on that climb. Despite myself, I made it to the top.
I never understood why we don't celebrate the Sherpas more. You know, Sir Edmund Hillary, I don't give a damn about you. It's the Sherpa who was carrying all your gear.
Listen, I could have paid, I think it was like 100 more bucks for them, not so I didn't have to carry the 50-pound backpack that I was carrying. I'm like, I waste money all the time. I didn't spend it on that, all right, because I was trying to be tough. That was stupid. But what used to kill me is we would get up in the morning. I think we're flying up on this hike, and these dudes are breaking down the camp, and they're like sprinting by us, and they finished the next day's camp. They had to be there 2 hours early. They're cooking. I'm like, how do they do? These people are superhuman.
Well, congratulations on not crying.
I want to say this because my friend is probably, if he listens to you every day, he's out there listening, Chris Lohman, and he's saying, yeah, but he almost did. I almost had it broken. Yeah, barely.
You are a warrior. Hashtag warrior.
Yeah. Hashtag weak-minded.
Thank you, Jeff. Safe travels, and we appreciate your time.
All right, take care, Dan.
That's Jeff Van Gundy of the Mothership. Yeah. These Sherpas, man. Those are the stars. Oh, and let's celebrate Sir Edmund Hillary, the first man to... And I'm like, the Sherpa! Sherpa did all the damn work! All Sir Edmund Hillary did is comb his hair when he got to the top and said, all right, how do I look for my photo opportunity? Yeah, see.
Yeah, I paid for this trip, see? Is there any group of people that are like at a job or a position more underappreciated than the Sherpa?
Yeah.
More underrecognized.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
By the way, best show on TV, new season just started. You guys want to take a guess? You shouldn't have to guess. You should know. Yes, Paulie.
Years ago, you would have said Bosch. That was
Bosch.
That,
I loved Bosch.
You loved Bosch.
But Bosch wasn't the best show on TV. Seton?
What's the one, The Flight Attendant?
That's season two is back on. I love that.
Yeah.
With Rosie Perez and Kaylee Cuoco. Barry, Bill Hader.
Ooh.
Season three. Fritzy, is Bill Hader going to join us?
He is joining us sometime this week for sure.
Oh, that'd be nice. Peter King joins us right now, Football Morning in America columnist, NBCSports.com. Best show on TV to you, Peter, is what?
Great British Baking Show.
Okay.
I don't know. I like the Great British Baking Show.
It's a great show. Been on a long time.
Yeah, and look, we're not... I've missed so many of these shows. It's almost intimidating when you start to, when somebody says, hey, have you seen this, this, and this? I haven't even seen Breaking Bad yet.
Ooh.
I mean, I got a long way to go. I'm stuck on The Sopranos.
Yeah. And then if you do Breaking Bad, you got to do Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the prequel to that. Yeah. You got a lot. Well, you're always working, Pete. You're always on the football.
I'm not really, Dan. Life is a little bit slowed down. Now, around draft time, life stinks because you just get competitive and you want to get as many of these right as you can. And it's eminently frustrating. But anyway, I got a big sigh of relief today because there's nothing else I can do right now.
Okay, if I said I'm going to give you a crystal ball and you could find out what this one team would be doing for the draft, the entire draft, what team would that be that you would want to know?
You know, it's a weird team because I'd really want to know the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay.
Because I have a feeling at 20, they're going to go quarterback. I said Kenny Pickett. Won't shock me at all if they go Malik Willis. But Pittsburgh is such an interesting team because they take great pride in hiding everything that they do. And I applaud them for that. Secrets really don't get out of that building. I'd probably be most curious about what the Steelers are going to do at 20.
I know that you hinted at maybe a surprise at the top of the draft. I saw where the new betting favorite, according to Las Vegas, is Trayvon Walker out of Georgia. Is that a surprise to you?
Well, I've been hearing it for a couple of weeks now, so I wouldn't say it's that big of a surprise. I don't know if it's going to happen, Dan, but I think that, you know, the guy who's got the most power in that building, honestly, is Trent Baalke. He always has been a tools guy with, you know, at the top of the draft. You saw what he did, and it's Aldon Smith is used as the great comparison because he picked Aldon Smith over J.J. Watt. If Aldon Smith didn't have all the problems that he had in his personal life, he could have had the impact long term that J.J. Watt has had. Could he have won 3 DPOYs? Probably not, but he could have been a great player. And so I think there is something to it. Some of the plays you've seen Trayvon Walker make on tape are incredible, but you know, he has not made nearly the number of plays that Aiden Hutchinson has made in his college career. And that is what is really kind of a different deal right now.
And I had a source tell me that Hutchinson is the safer pick. Walker has the higher ceiling here.
Yeah.
And I wonder about that. With Chris Long. Well, Chris Long was the second pick overall out of Virginia, and wasn't he considered a safe pick for the Rams?
I think that's a really good comparison because he basically was the guy who everybody thought was the safest pick. Now, Aiden Hutchinson, you might call him a safe pick, but man, he's made some explosive plays in college too. I personally think that Aiden Hutchinson will have the longer and better career. But Dan, if you ask me what player in this draft 5 years from now, we're going to look back and say, well, that is the best player out of this, I'd say it's Derek Stingley. And Derek Stingley could last past 10.
Yeah, I loved him his freshman year. In fact, yeah. I talked to Ed Orgeron. I said, I could see him winning the Heisman, having him be a two-way player. I was that impressed with him his freshman year. And it was a while ago that I had a source say Sauce Gardner is a top-5 pick. And I thought, okay. And then you started to watch Cincinnati, and then all of a sudden it feels like Sauce Gardner could be a top-10, maybe a top-5 pick. So you like Stingley over Gardner?
Well, I like him over the long term better, but I think that Sauce Gardner going before him is probably going to happen, and it's justified. Sauce Gardner basically has played 1,100 snaps of pass coverage in his college career, and in single coverage did not allow one touchdown. And how do you not want to pick him? I mean, obviously it gets tougher at the next level, but to me, I think what he is right now is he's more of a sure thing. And somebody described to me over the weekend, somebody described Stingley as Darrell Revis. And I think the one thing about Stingley that people say is that he is a very confident player, and that confidence is justified by how he plays. And one other thing, Dan, he practiced probably 75 to 100 times day to day covering Ja'Marr Chase in 2019. And, you know, like, that's as tough as it gets. And so I think he's trained well. He had a foot injury, obviously, last year, and that's better. I think Stingley is going to be a real good pro.
We're talking to Peter King, Football Morning in America. I know you're joining us from Berkeley, California. How big of a story is Deebo Samuel?
I mean, it's a huge story, especially if he sticks to his guns and he says he wants out and he's not going to back down. As you know, Dan, about 25%, if that, of guys who ever say, I want out, I'm not playing here ever again, blah, blah, blah. I mean, guys say that all the time. And then 5 months later, they're back in camp or they're back playing for the team they said they'd never play with again. So I don't mean that I think Deebo Samuel is lying or anything like that. I just think that opinions change, opinions become less hardened over time. And whether the 49ers are going to do something, I'd be really surprised if they did something by the draft this week. But we'll see.
Why does he want out?
I don't know the answer to that. And I think that people, people who know him say that he's a little bit more of a homebody and that this very well could be about the fact that he just wants to be closer to South Carolina, you know, where he's, the Carolinas where he's from. But I don't know how hardened he is in his position. And it seems a little odd too, because a year ago, you know, Mike McDaniel, then the offensive coordinator, said, if you do everything I tell you, you're going to be first team all pro. And he did everything that McDaniel told him to do. And he was first team all pro. And I personally wonder about the absence of the guy who even he said, Deebo said, is his favorite coach that he's ever had. So, you know, we'll see if that plays into it.
Baker Mayfield more likely to get traded during the draft or after the draft?
I think after. It wouldn't make any sense to me. First of all, I don't know what you really get for Baker Mayfield. I keep wondering, could this be a Brock Osweiler kind of trade? It's a weird situation that they're in. Everybody knows that he can't go back there, but you don't want to make him just a free agent. As Jeff Darlington said last week, Mike Florio's been talking about it for weeks, that the Pittsburgh Steelers would just go ahead and sign him. How weird would it be if the Steelers take Pickett or Willis at number 20 and they've got Mitchell Trubisky on their team and 2 weeks later sign Baker Mayfield with the Cleveland Browns paying their paying his salary? That's why I don't think the Browns are going to release him, because they want to have some control over where he goes.
Yeah, I wonder what he's worth, and then is Cleveland going to have to pick up the tab with his salary?
Going to have to pick up most, if not all, because they're the ones who said we're going to pick up the option. There's not a lot of teams that have the cap space to do it now anyway. I just don't see any way right now that that they can get away with making a deal for him without picking up most of the salary.
How difficult is it to try to do a mock draft and factor in the draft history of certain teams? Certain teams are really good at drafting and certain teams are not.
Here's the thing, Dan. The thing I thought was hardest about this year, I wish I had written about it because I thought about it a few times. Look at all of the people near the top of the draft who have no draft history or very little. You know, Trent Baalke has some, which is helpful. Brad Holmes in Detroit at number two. Dan Campbell, they have virtually no draft history. Nick Caserio, he's got 3-13, virtually no draft history. Joe Douglas at 4-10, a little draft history. Joe Shane, 5-7, no draft history whatsoever. I mean, so that's one of the things you can't say, well, you know, 3 years ago, this GM did this and this. There are so many new and neophyte general managers who are in control of this draft. That's one of the reasons why it's so hard to figure it out.
Pete, always great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us, and safe travels.
Hey, appreciate it, Dan. Thank you.
That's Peter King, Football Morning in America, and you can get it every Monday morning, NBCSports.com. Yeah, I would think Deebo Samuel, if he's going to be traded, he'd be traded prior to the draft. And, you know, maybe after day two of the draft, some team goes, hey, we're going to give a fourth-round pick Baker Mayfield. I don't know. It feels like there's going to be a curveball somewhere. There always is. There's always a team where you go, what are they thinking? And it's somebody going up. Somebody reaches for somebody. There's always going to be that team that takes a player. Because if you go back and look at these drafts, whenever you see a mock draft, you go, oh, that makes sense. They don't always make sense. But in the moment, you go, okay, I can see that. You get talked into it. And it's just, that's not reality. If you get 7 correct in the first round, you're probably doing pretty well. Because all it takes is one team does something, that changes everything when you're trying to do a mock draft. So I don't look at mock drafts other than let me see who's held in high regard and also introduce me to some of these players that maybe I didn't follow that much in college. That's what I look at with the mock drafts. I don't go, boy, this is what they're going to do. Wait, you guys missed that. You're wrong. It's really difficult to handicap this because these teams don't tell you the truth. Now you're going to rely on sources close to sources. Somebody saying, I'm thinking. Yeah, Paulie.
And if you go back, here's one that was a curveball. The 2019 draft, I think the New York Giants had the 6th pick, and they had, maybe like the 20th pick.
Yeah.
And everyone thought, with the 20th pick, maybe they'll take Daniel Jones out of Duke. They liked him. And all the mock drafts I'm looking at right up to the draft had maybe Daniel Jones going later in the first round to the Giants or another team. And then with the 6th pick, they take him. Way earlier than everyone expected, which threw off the whole draft after that.
Well, it was, you know, the Bears trading up to get Mitchell Trubisky. Because you're going, wait a minute, what is going on here? Mitchell Trubisky, wait, you're trading to get up to get him? You don't have to trade up to get him. you could have had him. That was the one where I went, oh my God, I should have watched more ACC football. And then Daniel Jones, I'm like, man, I got to start watching ACC football. So I watched Sam Howell this year. I'm ready, ACC football. And I still think the value that you could get with Matt Corral or Sam Howell is going to be the same as you could get for Kenny Pickett. I really feel that. But all it takes is one person. It's all you got to do. Just go, wait, what are you guys doing? Barry in Santa Fe. Hi, Barry. Thanks for holding. Best and worst.
Good morning, fellas, and good morning, chat row. Best of the weekend, my New York Mets winning 5 consecutive series. The pitching is awesome. We're getting 2-out RBIs. All of this without Jacob DeGrom. Worst of the weekend, if I hear 27 rings one more time from those dopey Yankee fans, classless louts who have disgraced the great name of New York City, enough of them.
Thank you, Barry. Thank you. Jack in Dallas. Hi, Jack. What's on your mind today?
First time, a long time, 5'9", 175. I want to get your take on if you believe that Steve Nash is on the hot seat potentially next year if they don't get past the first round. And I want to see if I can make a guess of what golf course you're at.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
The Vintage Club.
No.
Yeah.
No. It's the Madison Club is the name of the place. It's right across the street from Coachella. So you could play 18 and then walk over and see Harry Styles with Lizzo. My wife and I went, we drove by, and it's like a 2-hour queue to get in. And I wouldn't have the energy to do it. As much as I'd love to go see some of the bands, I just don't have the energy to get in to see the bands. Yeah, Mark.
Festivals sound terrible, yeah, by the way. It's like just being outside and then you're just waiting and it's hot and, oh, when's Lizzo going to come out?
But my daughter said that Coachella was so stressful. And I said, why? She goes, all the outfit changes that I had. And I go, what? What? The outfit changes?
Can I wear this crown of daisies with this outfit? I just don't know. It's hard, okay?
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.